The following is a presentation of Podjockey.
We're joined by Jeffrey Deaver. His latest is Solitude Creek, and it's a Catherine Dance novel. It's been a while since you've written about Catherine or given her her own novel. Why the delay and why the decision to do it this time around?
Sure. Well, as your listeners may know, I have created the Lincoln Rhyme character, the fellow from The Bone Collector, and he's probably my most popular character of the many that I've created. And Lincoln is a very interesting fellow. The only downside is that he's a pure scientist. You know, he's a forensic scientist, and people love that. We like the CSI show and NCIS and all of those TV shows and the movies that have the, you know, the Sherlock Holmes type expert in it. But there's always a lot of crime that really doesn't involve forensics, that has more to do with psychology. And so I created Catherine Dance a few years ago, and I've kept her in the the back room in a way, because Lincoln's taken the forefront. But I have been aware of several interesting incidents that involved mob psychology, and most notably a soccer accident in England a few years ago that came to the news when I was traveling in the UK, and thought, oh, well, that's a good story to write about, and Catherine is the perfect heroine to get involved in this kind of story.
Now, you talk about the mob psychology. You were actually caught in a Halloween parade crush and experienced it a little bit firsthand yourself.
It was a scary incident, Richard. This goes back some years. I was living in Greenwich Village, and the village then, it still may be, but I have not been back for a while, but the village was known for its massive Halloween parade, a very, very colorful, interesting event. What happened was that Greenwich Village is it's an old part of New York City, and accordingly, the sidewalks and the streets are pretty narrow. And so I was going to meet my girlfriend across the street, and we were going to watch the parade together, but it was just too packed. I couldn't move. I was stuck in a crowd, as she was, about a block or two away. And I was feeling quite uncomfortable. I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of the crowd, couldn't move through the crowd. Just having trouble breathing, actually, as many people were. We just felt uncomfortable. We realized there were too many people around. And then there was a bang, and it probably was a backfire, although it might have been a gunshot. New York wasn't quite as safe then as it is now. But the sound was really nowhere near us. It wasn't that there was a gunman. We weren't in danger of being shot. But it didn't matter. The crowd, just we became animals, and I was off my feet, being swept along with the crowd, and if anybody had fallen, they would have been, if not killed, they would have been, if not killed, certainly badly injured. And I put that in the back of my mind and said, I want to write about this someday. And then when the news hit England about it was an anniversary of a terrible football crush where 90 people were killed, I thought, well, I remember that incident in the village, and thought, well, that'll be my new book, which became Solitude Creek.
And you also refer to the Rhode Island Club, where they banned, I guess they were shooting off fireworks or something, and the fire codes weren't up to date, and some people were crushed in that situation.
Yeah, that was the station incident. And in my book, Solitude Creek, the villain, with a great name, don't ask me where this name came from, but Antioch March, I just love that name, he is someone who will, he orchestrates the crushes, and he will, it's more, a little more subtle than this, but in effect, let's just say he yells fire in a crowded venue when the doors don't open, the fire doors don't open, he seals them shut. No one's actually in any danger of being burned, but they don't know that, and so they really kill or injure themselves by trying to escape. Now, in the station, there was a real fire, and many people burned to death as well as were injured in the crush.
Now, there's a lot of child rearing in this book, and I'm wondering if this is reflecting on your personal experience, because you talk about having a boy and a girl and bullying and video games and all of that. You write very authoritatively about that. Tell us where that's coming from.
Well, thank you, Richard, for that. I'm an uncle. I don't have children myself, but I'm an uncle of a 5, a 7, and a 9-year-old. And Uncle Jeff has been somewhat involved in their upbringing. And, of course, the good news is when they were really young and needed the diapers changed, to often go back to their parents, they could take care of that stuff. But now that they're a little bit older, they love to read. They know that I write books. In fact, I have a very funny photograph of the three of them that their parents took. And it's they're all holding my my books, except the five-year-old has the book upside down because she doesn't know the way the words work at this point. But I kind of drew on my experience with them and created some, I could call it some adolescent angst issues in the book. Now, I will say quickly that these are Captain Dance's children, a 10 and a 12-year-old, and they're never in peril. I don't like to threaten or risk, children in the books in the same way I don't want to imperil animals. And in the same way, my books are not about sexual violence. I want there to be suspense. There is certainly the risk of injury and death, but I don't want to play that kind of cheap card. But with the children, of course, there are issues at school. There are issues about the bullying that are very, very real. And frankly, I think, most of us have more experience with those, I guess I'd say, more subtle types of risk rather than the serial killer or the terrorist.
Well, the interesting thing, too, when you talk about imperiling and the technique, in all your books, one of the things that you do often, and I'm sure you're very, very aware of this, and you do it intentionally, is you lead us right up to the actual act, and then blackout, and then afterwards you have the analysis of what happened. So in other words, you don't often describe what happened, but you go back and get it, as opposed to in real time as it's going on. You leave us right at the peak, right at the cliff of what's about to happen. And then sometimes it does happen, and then sometimes it doesn't, and the person gets away. Tell us about that technique, which you very often use.
That touches on two elements of my approach to writing. And the first is that I think suspense is a much better model for fiction than gore. You're probably familiar with, and some of your listeners are, with these, they actually have a name for it. It's called torture porn, and not porn in the sex sense. It's porn in the sense that of sensationalistic depictions of graphic violence and torture. That, to me, is a creative failure, and I don't like it. And I don't think most people like it either. I think they prefer, as I say, the suspense model, the Alfred Hitchcock model. And so in my books, I don't depict gruesome scenes. There certainly is death and violence in them, but there's really no need to linger on that. Well, that's one element that I try to keep in mind. The other is something based on something that Mickey Spillane, the great pulp fiction writer, said. And he said this: people don't read books to get to the middle. We read books to get to the end, meaning that it's the author's job to create these questions throughout the book that drive the reader from the beginning to the end. And if you answer the question right away, somebody walks into a dark room and you see them stabbed to death, well, that's a dramatic incident, but it doesn't raise a question. We know that they're dead. We know that they've been stabbed. Why not end that scene with them walking into the room where we suspect the killer is waiting, but we're not sure? That way the reader will keep charging through the book to find out what happened.
And you also reveal the killer very early in Antioch March, but there are layers of the onion to peel away. Who is he working for? Why is he doing that? And, the apprehension of him, too. But it's more like, okay, we know who's doing it. We got to figure out how they catch him and why he's doing what he's doing.
Sure. I don't really write whodunits. It's pretty much clear from the beginning who is behind the crime. Although, as you say, I usually have multiple perpetrators. So is Mark working for somebody, or does he have another agenda? And the why he's doing what he's doing is as much a driving question as who is behind this. And that also raises more questions about can Catherine Dance and her team of law enforcers figure out why he's doing this and therefore stop him, stay one step ahead of him if possible.
And early in the book, you have an incident where she appears to be incompetent or makes mistakes and gets demoted as a result, and her career is actually seemingly in peril. And it's interesting the way you bring that around. I don't want to give away too much here, but, it is not an exact science because, as you say, there are these Machiavellians who can, appear completely normal when they're lying through their teeth.
Yes, your listeners may be interested in Catherine's specialty. She's an investigator, a policewoman, but her specialty is kinesics. It's body language. And in one of the opening scenes of the book, she is analyzing someone who appears innocent and writes him off as a suspect. And he actually leaves police custody, but they learn that he not only knew information about a crime, he was behind the crime. And, I do that for, obviously, there's some twists involved and surprises, but I also do that because I think our heroes have to have flaws, because we all have flaws. the villains are bad, but they have a good side, and I like to create the heroes who are realistic. And so I think we really feel for Catherine, because who hasn't made a mistake? But of course, as you say, there's a lot more to it than that. I love my layers.
Well, you've also cross-pollinated. You mentioned Lincoln Rhyme because he and Amanda give her a watch, which gets broken and then subsequently repaired. But you've also had them work together in the past. Do you plan to cross-pollinate them again at some future date?
I do. Lincoln, of course, is the ultimate scientist, very skeptical of the, I call it the mind policing. That's the people approach to solving crimes, which Catherine is the expert at. And she's, while she respects forensics, no police officer today could investigate any crime without paying attention to DNA and fingerprints and so on. But she's a bit skeptical, and she's also not so interested in it. She thinks the criminal mind is just a fascinating playground to study. And so the two of them together are quite symbiotic, and I've had fun with their kind of playful jousting back and forth about whose specialty is the better. But nonetheless, in the end, they're good friends, and they do ultimately need each set of skills to solve the crime. And that's a very fun approach to take. So they will definitely be back again.
And for those who like a little romance in their books, Solitude Creek also features a little bit of a love triangle, which gets resolved at the end as well.
I, of course, have the core story being a crime of some sort in all my novels. But I think it's important to, in keeping with the idea of making human characters, to include what I call, with some affection, the soap opera element of the story. And I probably get more emails or snail mail from fans who are interested in Catherine Dance's romantic life more than the ones who say, well, that was a great villain and very clever about this use of a scientific crime-solving device. That was interesting, yes. But what's going to happen with Catherine? Who's she going to end up with? People do seem to love that.
Jeffrey Deaver, the book is Solitude Creek. Thank you so much for your time.
A real pleasure, Richard. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
The proceeding is a presentation of Podjockey. Copyright 2015. All rights reserved.